RadioInfluence.com.
I am Jeff Crichel. The Con Man is right here keeping us on track, and we're your weekly source for performance information. If you have any questions, comments, smart remarks, or if you have a topic you'd like us to look into, let us know. We may dedicate a segment or maybe even an entire episode to your idea. We actually have a couple of these shows coming up this fall, so get to us for sure at our website, crushperformance.com. There, you'll find our blog, our newsletter, you can get our podcast, you can, of course, email us, and you can get information on my new book, Hot Off the Press. It's available on Amazon. It's called The Performance Plan, Strategies for Top Performance in Sport, Business, Coaching, and Life. This book was truly a labor of love. I totally enjoyed the process of writing, putting it together. And one thing I found that I thought was pretty interesting, just from a personal perspective, when I read the book over again and again, after editors, after proofreaders, I kept finding imperfections. So I added this little part on the end of the book. This was after the book was finished. I had to add it on because every time I read it, I found something wrong, whether it was a spelling error, a missing word, double words. And it got me thinking about perfection and our obsession with perfection and what does it take to be great and the pressure we put on ourselves. So I added this little piece on at the end of the book talking about exactly that. And I think by the time it was finally done and published, I'm pretty happy with how it turned out. Now, it's my first book. We're getting our feet wet. I'm learning the process, but it was a ton of fun. It's on Amazon right now. You can go pick it up. And if you do, hey, let me know what you think. I'd really like to know. I tried to write it as if I were talking to one of my athletes or the leaders of the organizations I work with. And I just wanted to maybe share some of the things I've learned over the years. And I know I've helped a lot of people, and it certainly helped me as well. So I want to thank everybody who helped out with this book. It was a great exercise, and I hope the message comes across, and I hope maybe we can help a few people for sure. Well, today we're going to try to help some people with a couple of unbelievable guests. We're going to visit again with one of our crush favorites, Jim Fannin, the coach of champions. We're going to talk Olympics. What does it take to get into the mindset of being one of the world's best and then stepping into the stage, the pressure cooker that is the Olympics? What can you do to calm your mind and maximize performance? Well, anybody can do it, and there are tricks to the trade. Jim Fannin is going to talk to us about that. And then later in the show, there's a new weapon in our quest for top performance, and it's all in the numbers. Analytics and data have been around for years and years. It's made a massive surge into the world of professional sport. It's taken over baseball. We've seen it in hockey. We certainly see it in football, every major sport. And now it's making its presence known on the world stage and at the Olympics as teams and athletes look for every absolute opportunity for improving performance. And the Canadian Olympic program is taking it to a new level. We're going to talk later in the show with data analyst Mike Heenan to find out just how powerful the numbers are and how sports are using these numbers to get an edge. That's all coming up on Crush Performance. Stick around right after the break. Jim Fannin, the coach of champions.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at CrushPerformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to the show, everybody. We are talking Olympics. You know, we often say, if you want to find out what to do, look to the pros. Look to the very, very best of the best. If you want to find out how to tick and how to make your world operate, because there's always a lot to learn from watching top performers go about their business. And there's no better place than the biggest stage in all of sports, the Olympics. Summer or winter, this is where it all comes down to one or two attempts that represent 4 years of work against some of the best competitors in the world. There is no doubt the Olympics are an incredible pressure cooker for all the athletes. So how do they deal with it? How do they go about qualifying? How do they go about preparing themselves the day of their race or their competition? And how do you go about focusing 4 years of effort for this one big event? It's an incredible process. And we often say, as I mentioned, we look to the pros to understand how to do it. And to help us dive in a little deeper on the mindset side of things, we are joined now by Crush all-time favorite Jim Fannin, the coach of champions. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, one of my favorite shows. I'm always glad to be on your show.
Well, very exciting time
to be on.
Yeah, no, I'm glad we can make it. And I've been looking forward to this conversation because there's nothing like the Olympics. And preparing and competing on the world's biggest stage is not an easy task. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about today, because I think there's a lot to learn from these top performers, Jim, when we look at, you know, what they have to do to prepare and then qualify. And then once every 4 years, give it their best shot. What a pressure cooker the Olympics are.
It's an extreme pressure cooker. I mean, there are some Olympians that are just glad to be there. You know, that's it. Their dream was maybe not to win the gold medal, believe it or not. Their goal is make the Olympics. They've made it. They're there. They're part of the experience. There's others that have won world championships, competed on you know, the highest possible level. They're there to win the gold and a medal. And obviously the difference between a bronze, a silver, and a gold, you know, can be fractions of a second. And it's 4 years, and then all of a sudden you're there for one moment. And that moment is a window that closes swiftly. And if you miss it, you miss your jump, you miss your maneuver, you miss your objectives, it's over. And that's tough for a lot of athletes.
Yeah, it certainly is, Jim. And when we watch what's going on in the world stage, I'm going to tell you right now, I love the Olympics. And of course, me being Canadian, lots of good friends and athletes I've worked with down in the U.S., but globally, these are the world's best athletes. It's really awesome to watch that opening ceremonies. It's great to see, you know, athletes from all these countries sort of, you know, tapping each other on the back after the heat of battle. This is good for the world at this point in time, don't you think? I just really feel.
The world. You know, I've been traveling extensively for the last 40 years, but definitely in the last 6 months. And it is the most, speaking of America, it's the most depressed, most divisive, most chaotic time that I've seen in my lifetime. And when you get to an Olympics, it is just pure joy. Athletes loving to compete. The camaraderie in the Olympic Village, which I've been to, it's always phenomenal. And sharing, buttons and sharing lots of things with each other, food as well. And they have one thing in common, you know, they're there to get into the zone at the right time and right place. And all the athletes have their own pre-performance time, but boy, hitting that mark at the right time and right place, it's not easy. Some people peak too soon, some peak too late. And then there's a few, that peak at the exact right time, and that's typically a medal winner.
Yeah, we're talking with Crush favorite, Mr. Jim Fannin, the coach of champions. Jim, you know, I've been watching the Olympics
as closely as possible. And I'm really digging the freestyle events, the slope style, the boarding, the skiing. It's really cool. It's hip. It's got that X Games feel. I think that the Olympics was really missing in the past, but it's been a lot of fun to watch these athletes compete. But to see them standing on the top of the run, whether it's slope style, whether it's the moguls, or even whether it's the ski jumping, watching them focus, going through their routines, just fantastic stuff. Now, listen, I know you've worked with some of the athletes who have competed in the Olympics. What kind of things are they thinking about as they are 10 minutes out from their run, or while they're standing at the top of their run, just to get in that zone you're talking about?
Well, you know, the average person walking around has about 15 to 17 breaths per minute. If you get stressed, it'll go over 20 breaths per minute. That's not a positive. And that's really going to be the challenge. They want to get their breathing down to about a 6 to 8 breath per minute and try to find that calm. The key there is to trust that all that hard work that you've done, what you have is enough, and you just need to be. But the one thing that is going to happen before the zone arrives, their stomach, and this is every athlete, no matter how well you're prepared or not, the blood vessels and the capillaries in the stomach will start to constrict about 15 minutes to 20 minutes before the event. And it diverts the blood from the stomach to the brain so that you have more clarity and better focus. And then the rest of the blood goes to the large muscles so that you have inordinate quickness, speed, agility, and strength. Now, that's called the butterflies. And we get the butterflies when we give a speech, a big sales presentation. It's no different than an Olympian, even at that world-class level. They're going to get the butterflies, but if they believe they're nervous, which they're not nervous, they're literally preparing to go into a zone state. But if you think you're nervous, that energy will come back on you. It'll hide in your muscles. It'll tense up your grip on your skis, not your skis, but on the poles. It's going to change you physically. Your jaw will lock up, and it's the opposite of what you need. You cannot be in the zone unless your jaw is unhinged. But if you got your breathing around 20 breaths a minute, you think you're nervous, there's some athletes that can definitely panic, even well-trained athletes like that, because you know, it's a small window of opportunity, and the world's watching.
Absolutely. Everybody, you can go to jimfannin.com and get Jim's fantastic podcast. Jim, you just had Dan O'Brien on. Great conversation, ex-Olympian. He had a lot of cool things to say as well. I thought it was pretty great to you visit with athletes who have been on that massive, massive world stage.
Well, you know, Dan, before he won the gold medal in the decathlon the year 4 years before, he basically choked. And they had these Dave and Dan commercials, and tens of millions of dollars were putting, you know, these two athletes can't miss. They're going to vie for the gold medal. And he actually failed in the qualifier. And very disappointing, obviously disappointing to the sponsor that spent all that money for the Olympics, and he didn't even go. They had to pull the commercials. And you know, a lot of people could have quit. A lot of people could have packed it in. But he tightened up a new blueprint for himself, really got more dedicated to peak at the right time and right place, and he went out and prevailed. And the interesting thing, you know, you don't have to perform out of your mind, you know. Some events you might need to do that, but typically most of the field's going to lose to you because they're choking. Even the best Olympians, and reaching a high daily standard while you're there, that's the key, and that's a minimum requirement for a satisfactory, solid performance, only according to you. So, and that was Dan's approach. I'm just going to hit a high standard every day, and that's what he did. So when he won the gold, he actually told me, you know, that was not the best I've ever done, but that was good enough to reach gold.
Oh.
His standard was most people's peak.
I absolutely love it. He raised himself so far above the bar that even his 80% was world class. And Jim, we've talked about this on the show before. It just reminds me of a conversation we had in one of our previous talks about being the best that day, right?
Yeah, and if you're hitting high daily standards in everything you do, even if you're a junior athlete, junior hockey player. The difference, greatness is the differential between your best and worst performance. And you want that differential very, very small. So if you start hitting that daily standard, and that's really what you're setting your sights on doing, the stress of the big moment can then lift you up to another level, a zone state, without trying. It happens without trying. And I've said this so many times, the word try, we always want our kids to try, but the word try, T-R-Y, I say, well, that's to ruin yourself. You know, the best in the world look effortless. They're smooth. They look like they're not trying. And that is an attribute of the zone. It's a purposeful calm. And I think the calm is what most of us really struggle with as competitors.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that is something that's incredibly trainable, Jim, and something that maybe you acquire over time with a bunch of discipline, but you can't do it without a plan. So you mentioned something very interesting there. You mentioned Dan's blueprint. I am incredibly excited about your new book coming out here later in February, The Blueprint, A Proven Plan for Successful Living. But that plan is all important, isn't it? And knowing how to formulate that plan is just as important.
Well, nothing great happens without a blueprint. You can't build a building, you can't build a home, and you can't build a successful life without a blueprint. You can't build a business. You can't build your financial wealth without a plan. It's amazing how even some of the best wing it based on their talent.
Right.
And talent, well, that's probably an entry fee just to get in. But you better have a plan. And, I was asked on an interview how many clients I had at one time. And I didn't know the answer. I started laughing. I said, oh, my goodness, I don't know. And I found out because one of my staffers had to go back in boxes. You know, in the 70s, I didn't have a computer. You know, there's no computers. So everything was in a box in paper. And they ascertained that I had approximately 2,500 clients. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I didn't know I had that many. And every one of those clients, I help them with their life blueprint. And I tell every athlete that I coach, you're more than an athlete. You know, you're more than a baseball player. You're more than a hockey player. You're more than that. You know, you're a son, you're a sister, you know, you got your own self, your spirituality, all those things. But you're so much more than your sport. And when you do your blueprint and segregate it, which I've done for every athlete, and each part of your life has its own visions, goals, and tasks, that's really what the blueprint book is about. So we took all 2,500 clients, put their individual blueprints, and started compiling them. And of course, for a golf example, one client, he wants to be number one in the world. And that was Luke Donald's quest. And other clients, maybe they want to be, wear the green jacket at the Masters coming up in April. But some just, they're not pro golfers. They just want to win a club championship or get their handicap down. So every client was different. But, you know, in the book, you're going to see these visions, goals, tasks, and even key people in each of these life arenas. And it's just going to help you create your own map. And it's proven, of the 2,500, all have been successful. And it's really proof, not to me as their coach, or it's the proof that nothing great happens without a blueprint.
Oh, great stuff. We're talking with Jim Fannin, the coach of champions. You could check out Jim's great stuff at jimfannin.com. Blueprint is, you can pre-order it right now on Amazon and on Jim's website. I really like this idea, Jim, of preparing. And, you know, you mentioned a couple of athletes there, Luke Donald being one. I know you've had a lot of time with sort of mainstream sport athletes as well, like Frank Thomas. But how different is this? You know, you and I talk a lot about the tennis world. We certainly talk golf quite a bit. We're talking the Olympics today, those big event-driven sort of sports. What a different animal baseball and hockey and the NBA and the NFL and Major League Soccer are, where you're playing a number of competitive matches per week, where you have those event-driven sports, kind of like the Olympics, where you get time to plan and build and build and build. Two different animals, but each one requires a plan.
Well, each of those sports, they're definitely different. I mean, baseball is a marathon. You know that. You've been in that game. My goodness, that's brutal. 200 games, counting spring training, and if you make the playoffs, that's just brutal. I had a college kid complain how tired he was last year with 38 games. I'm like, oh my goodness, you're in trouble. So it's a marathon. The Olympics, that's not a marathon. You got a 2-week window to do what you got to do. That's totally a different animal. But the one thing they have in common, every athlete in those sports has the same amount of pre-performance time. And it's the quality of that that's really going to help you open your performance at a high standard. Every athlete has the same amount of performance time, you know, the duration of the event or contest or game. And every athlete has post-performance time. And I found that that's where the difference is. Some evaluate great, some don't. Some act like victims and judges, and that's even some of the top pro athletes. They don't always evaluate consistently and objectively. And then there's pre-performance time again, which kind of threads performances together, and that could be a little bit different from what you've learned from the performance before. So, you know, those are the four segments of one unit of experience: pre-performance time, performance time, post-performance time, pre-performance time again, where you may have to retool. And if you really have high quality, you're hitting high standards, you've got to plan for each of these, you know, parts of your performance, you don't have to have the experience sometimes of a veteran. And this is how a young athlete can go straight to the top. I've told so many young athletes, there's two ways to go to the top. One, just go there. I remember in my tennis playing days, John McEnroe, he started right off the bat. He came out, I'm number one. Here I am. My ranking just hadn't caught up yet. That's not easy, and that's not for everybody. And then the other way, of course, is to work your way up systematically, kind of plateau learning your way up. And that takes a little more time. But if you can get some quality in those four units of just one experience, you can really short circuit the amount of time it takes you to be the best you can be.
Oh, Jim Fannin, just nugget after nugget after nugget, my good man. Fantastic stuff. We're talking with Jim Fannin, the coach of champions, our good friend here on Crush Performance. Jim, before we let you go, that was a great conversation that we just had, you know, referring to just getting ready for competition and getting yourself prepared in mind and body for sure. There's a group of athletes out there right now as baseball spring training gets underway that they have way more time than they would like on their hands. And that's the free agents who are now down at the IMG Academy in Bradenton. A really, really unique time in baseball. And these top performers are dealing with something that, boy, oh boy, I don't know if we've ever seen this before.
Well, you know, I can be pretty vocal. I know you've worked for management, and I've made up my career. I only work for labor. So I don't work for the teams. I work for the individual.
Mm-hmm.
I find this very unusual. It's almost an outlier. you got 60 free agents that they haven't picked up yet. I've never seen that. Now the players union has them all sequestered together. You and I talked about it before the show. Well, you could build a great team out of these 60 guys. So I don't know what's going on, but you know, it starts at the top. You got billionaires with millionaire players. They spend a lot of money at the top. I'm not sure what they're trying to do with these particular athletes, but it seems a little strange. I don't want to use the word collusion. That's a horrible word, but hey, it seems unusual. I haven't seen it in 40-some years. I haven't seen anything like it.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on. I know the players' union is a little concerned, but here's all these free agents. I know none of them want to be there. They don't want to be at the IMG baseball field. You know, they want to be signed with a team. They got families. They got plans they got to do. So it's a pretty stressful time for them right now. So it'll be interesting to see who's going to get in the zone and who's going to get picked up and get offered a nice contract.
Yeah. No, interesting times. We'll watch that with great interest, and we'll continue to watch the Olympics with interest and learn as much as we can from some of the world's top performers.
I may have just shot myself in the foot for working for management.
No, I don't think so, Jim. Hey, there's nothing better than having your eyes wide open. I disagree with you. I think, you know, there's many teams that would really, really appreciate your insights, especially when it comes to this scenario right now, because I think this is bigger than any one organization or any one team. This is a systematic problem that baseball's having right now, and we can only pray that it gets leveled out at some point here in the near future.
Well, there's one thing we better not forget. It's a monopoly. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it. There's no other league, you know, Major League Baseball. That's it. However, I do have a couple of athletes that are signed big contracts in Japan. Another athlete, pitcher, signed big contract in Korea. So those leagues are thriving. You know, they're not allowed to have that many foreign players on their team, usually four per team. But that's just happened. So I've got more players actually going to Japan and Korea than I've had in my career.
Interesting.
And maybe that's why.
Yep. It's a sign of the times, perhaps, Jim Fannin. Great stuff, Jim. Hey, good luck with the blueprint that's coming out on February 27th. Everybody, you can go to Jim.
I appreciate it. I got to get you a copy.
Oh, I'd love one.
I have one of my first ones. And we got to get together. I'm looking forward to coming up and seeing you.
Yep. It's in the works right now. We're working hard to put together that blueprint in itself. So thanks so much, Jim Fannin. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Be in the zone, Jeff. Bye-bye.
And there you have it, yet another fantastic conversation with Jim Fannin. You know, we could just do a weekly show with Jim. So much to learn. And listen, there is a lot of great information in this interview. If you want to go get this podcast, go to our website, crushperformance.com. Punch the podcast button and it'll take you right to our archives, and you can download this on virtually any platform out there. We're on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, you name it, we're on it. Fantastic conversation. We have to thank Jim for that. When we return from the break, data analytics has officially hit the world stage as Olympic teams are now crunching numbers to get every possible advantage. And the Canadian Olympic team has taken it to an entirely new level. We're going to talk with data analyst Mike Keenan of the Canadian Olympic team to find out just how powerful the numbers are and how sports are now using numbers to gain an edge on the world stage. Right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around, everyone.
Radio Influence brings you the absolute best in digital audio broadcasting. We've got something for everyone. Sports personalities like the fabulous Sports Babe, Rich Herrera, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy as they take you inside the dugout. We'll take you inside the world of MMA with the MMA Report with Jason Floyd, the MMA Insiders, and the Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxendine. Or you could find yourself sitting ringside with wrestling ring announcer David Penn. TV law enforcement analyst and former police officer Vincent Hill breaks down this week's biggest crime stories and takes you beyond the badge. Chef Brian Duffy from TV's Bar Rescue shares his crazy life on the road with Duffified Live. And Scott Ledger will always make you think with some dangerous conversation. All of Radio Influence's shows can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening.
listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, everybody, Jeff Crishell here, the con man behind the glass. We're your weekly source for performance information. Crushperformance.com is the website. Hey, if you want to get in touch with us, text us right now. The Crush question of the day is, are you encouraged by what's happening with the Russian doping scandal? Cracking down, banning them for doping, caught with their hand in the cookie jar, however you want to do it. Or has the realization of what's going on in sport turned you off? Let me know. A couple texts here that I got to get to. Listen, this is a great one. When doping can take down guys like Lance Armstrong, Barry Bonds, A-Rod, you know it's everywhere. It's just a matter of not getting caught. Great show. Thank you, Andrew, for sure. It is everywhere. And we're doing our best to crack down on the cheaters, no doubt about it. And this one here's a great one from Gio. Crush, if the Russian scandal was state mandated, there will be athletes who didn't want to dope. True, very true, but we're forced to. There's no question about that. As a matter of fact, there's statements from some of the whistleblowers saying, hey, if they didn't go into the program, they would lose all their rights as a national athlete. These are likely the positive athletes that were reinstated. Listen, there's no question we want the clean athletes to compete, but here's what we know. This new CSA, Court of Arbitration for Sport ruling, has reinstated athletes that the WADA firmly believed were cheating at some point in time. So it's a big controversy, Gio. Thanks for that email. So everybody, listen, data is now entering the big leagues of sport, the Olympic programs. And joining us right now to talk about it is data analyst, let's get it right, Mike Keenan. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, as athletes and sport programs look for an edge, the numbers may be the answer, and it's hit the world stage. I was really, really excited to hear about the advent or the addition of analytics into the world of international sport, Mike. Maybe to kick us off, maybe give us a little background on you and how you got into this very cool area of study.
Yeah, so in early 2015, On the Podium realized there was a bit of a gap in analytics. It's something that other countries were doing, but Canada wasn't doing as much there yet. They didn't exactly have the resources available to do this level of analytics. So they leveraged their partnership with Canadian Tire, who was already a sponsor of the Olympics. They have a financial services arm that does all the credit card work, fraud and collections and all that kind of stuff. And then they discover, you know, there's a group of analysts that are really into sports, and they can leverage that group, take them into the sports analytics side, put them there full time, and allow them to work just on Olympic analytics. So I joined that team about 2 years ago, and they're already a little bit of a way in, but now we're 3 years into the relationship, and it's really starting to help Team Canada in the Olympics.
Yeah, I really like the idea of data analytics, especially for the Olympic sports. What a cool twist. Mike, we've seen it in baseball. We see it in football. Certainly the Corsi numbers in hockey, not only in terms of player performance right now, but also in terms of projecting talent. I mean, it's been a really big part of sport, and I think we're kind of reaching an equilibrium where it's really getting powerful.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things we noticed in sports is that, you know, we want to be able to identify the athletes in advance of when they're at medal potential, so we can ensure that we invest appropriately in them. You know, if we're looking at swimming and we have one of the fastest swimmers is a 30-year-old versus they have a 15-year-old who's a little bit slower, we want to make sure we look at that, because, you know, a 30-year-old is going to tend to be on their decline while a 15-year-old is still right on the incline. So we want to make sure that we're investing appropriately to the athletes looking forward to, you know, Pyeongchang or 4 years from now or even 8 years from now, that we're looking at the right athletes.
We're talking with data analyst Mike Keenan from the Canadian sport program. Well, pretty exciting to be involved in this heading into a major event like the Winter Olympics, Mike. Hey, tell me, you know, on the big scale, which sports are involved and what kind of data are you guys looking at to make a difference? I mean, if we look at luge or bobsled or some of these speed sports, for example, I mean, hundredth of a millisecond can mean inches and can mean being on the podium or off the podium. So I can see this data and breaking down of data being really, really powerful for a lot of these athletes.
Yeah, and looking at luge and bobsled specifically, we know that you know, we're trying to create that extra 1% to help the athlete. 1%, we know in these sports can be, as you said, a millisecond or even less. With luge and bobsled, you know, we have the performance results for all the World Cups and all the World Championships, all the events that Canadian international athletes compete in. As well, for bobsled, we have actually GPS data, so data from the sled. We know which way it's accelerating. We know their roll angle. We know their speed. And we get that 100 times per second. So we can identify some gaps. We can look at the Canadian teams, look at the winning teams, see where was the differences on these courses and where can they improve.
Mike, listen, this is really interesting. The GPS on top of it all, I'm sure you guys are incorporating other numbers. I really, really like the idea of, you know, helping young athletes. Well, first of all, identifying young athletes, but maybe even using the numbers to steer and focus maybe the intent of the training. I mean, there's a lot of different uses for this type of data, isn't there?
Yeah, for sure. And we know, you know, with lots of events, we have different split times. So we can see, you know, some athletes are stronger at the start of the race and they tire towards the end of the race. Or maybe their pacing is the other way and they're too slow at the start of the race and they can't catch up. We see that in short track. We can sort of identify pacing strategies to allow the skaters to be in the appropriate position at the appropriate time to be able to win a race. If they get too far behind early, they're not going to win. If they spend too much of the race at the front and they can't draft, then we know they're not going to win either. So it allows us kind of, not only just for training, we can sort of identify where their weaknesses are, but also to identify an optimal strategy for them to take in the race.
Oh, I like the idea of performance strategies. We're talking with Mike Heenan, data analyst for Sport Canada. So we're talking about performance edges. We're talking about competitive strategies, injury prevention, recuperation. I'm sure all these numbers come into play, especially when we're training these athletes to compete at the top of the world.
Yeah, for sure. There's so many pieces that go into an athlete performance at the Olympic level. We're only one piece of it, but it's just another piece of information to give them to allow them to get a better idea of what needs to be done to win an Olympic medal at the highest level.
Hey, Mike, how important is it to understand and really monitor the environment? I mean, we talk about things like, I mean, look what we're doing in the Winter Olympics. It's a very almost unnatural environment. We are training and competing on ice. We've got the snow. We've got fluctuations in wind, especially for, you know, the ski jumpers and the freestyle guys who are flying through the air. We have the sun. So many different variables there. Does this come into the calculations as well?
Yeah, and it comes in for some sports a lot. So for example, we have long track speed skating, and we know that the conditions have an extreme effect on time. So if you were preparing for the Olympics in Calgary, your times aren't going to really make any sense to what would happen in Pyeongchang. We have, you know, different humidity, temperature, all of those environmental factors. So we can actually take those into account and provide you with the time in Calgary that you need to be attaining in order to attain a winning time in Pyeongchang. We can kind of convert between the two places and all across the world, because, you know, we find with a lot of sports that even though time is what is used to measure whether or not you win a medal, it's not really comparable across different events, different countries, because of all those environmental factors.
Yeah, sure. No, it makes sense, Mike. Hey, when you guys were putting together the program, Mike, did you guys consider what some of the sports were doing? I mean, we've seen analytics enter professional sports like nothing else we've ever seen. And in my humble opinion, I think, you know, when it first came in, the whole Moneyball era, if we look at baseball, for example, or the Corsi numbers in hockey, we could talk football all day long because the numbers are off the charts in football. And soccer, the data is crazy. I think it's very start of this whole analytical age, maybe, you know, 5, 6, maybe as early as 10 years ago, we really redlined on this stuff. And I think now it's recalibrating where the numbers have gotten really, really cool, but maybe even more so, very, very meaningful as well. Did you guys look at other sports when you're putting this model together?
Yeah, for sure. We considered that, you know, when we started this project, that from a Canadian perspective, Olympic analytics hadn't really begun, but sports analytics had. So we regularly borrow analytics from other sports. I'll give you an example of curling. One of our contacts is actually the women's coach for Team Homan in Pyeongchang, and they wanted to help developing a model for win probability so they could look at what point in the game they're at, what's the likelihood of Team Canada winning. And not to mention that, we can actually go and look at, based on where they are in the game, how their performance in the next end, whether they score 3 or 2 or give up points, how that's going to affect the win probability. Something we see in baseball, we can look at, it's pretty simple, like what is the score, how many runners are on base, who's at the plate. You can calculate a win probability from there. We've taken that and done the same thing for curling, so we can ensure that score late in the game in the gold medal match, that we know we're not getting too aggressive, that we're affecting our win probability negatively, but also not too conservatively, that we make the moves we need to make in order to win a gold medal.
Every little edge counts. We're talking with Mike Heenan, data analyst for Sport Canada. Hey, Mike, you mentioned curling there. That's sort of been your baby. You're focusing on the curling team. You know, they're well underway in Pyeongchang here. And maybe could you share with us some of the information that maybe surprised you as you started breaking down the analytics for curling?
Yeah, I think what we found is interesting was, you know, if you watch curling on TV, you'll see shooting percentages. They're showing in the Olympics right now. You'll see, you know, John Morris is shooting 70%, Caitlin Laws is shooting 75%. We wanted to go in and see, like, what do those numbers really mean? And what we found after we collected those 400,000 shots from different games, we were able to go in and see that those shooting percentages that they show on TV and can be used to identify how well an athlete is doing didn't really make a whole lot of sense, that they were sort of treating every shot as the exact same. So if you're shooting really easy shots the whole game, you know, you can approach 100% no problem. But if you're the skip and you have to shoot more difficult shots, you're kind of getting penalized for that. There's no level of difficulty involved in the shot. So what we were able to do was go in and look and say, okay, this system doesn't make sense. And we were able to rebuild a system that Curling Canada could use to actually identify how well is it a curler actually curling in a game. They're taking really difficult shots. We have to take that into account, or else they're going to get a low shooting percentage. It's not going to look good for them. So I was a little surprised by that, that something you see on TV for probably the last 10, 15 years doesn't necessarily accurately predict how well an athlete is doing.
Very interesting. And, you know, that really does sort of resonate with me in terms of what we see in baseball. Some of the typical age-old statistics that we've been relying on in baseball are really absolutely meaningless when it comes to actually breaking down and understanding player performance. And, you know, a couple of the cool things that happen if we talk baseball specifically with spring training getting underway is how the data has been used to sort of steer the game strategically. We look at, let's say, the shift, for example, when to shift, how to shift. It used to be sort of batter by batter. Now it's almost pitch by pitch as they break down the odds and play the odds. Is this kind of what we're going to see now moving forward in terms of the Olympic type sports?
Yeah, I think so. And as we are able to collect more and more data, we're able to get a more, you know, granular detail on the sport. So in a long term, our goal for curling is to be able to look at, you know, at, you're looking at a particular shot, you have the certain rocks on the ice, you know, what's your best shot in this scenario? You know, we know the curlers go on their gut, and probably their gut is probably right 98% of the time. We want to make sure that that 2% of the time, if that happens in the gold medal match, that they're not making the wrong decision. So we want to be able to help them there. There's so much detail. There's so many places to go with this. We're just at the beginning.
Yeah, and Mike, you know, that 2% that you mentioned in the world stage is massive, isn't it?
Yeah, like we're looking at, you know, a racing event, 1% is a millisecond, and curling that 1% might be one shot in the middle of the game. We want to make sure that they have the information available to them that will help them with those decisions.
Okay, hey, Mike, really cool conversation. I'm pretty excited about this, and this is such an important part of sport. One, as you mentioned, for maybe identifying young potential and young athletes coming into sport. Two, steering training methods and focus of training, strategic decisions in terms of what's happening inside of a game. So after you had your time here with the Olympics, what would you like to see moving forward, or where do you predict this is going to go moving forward? I mean, you guys are certainly going to be involved in the Summer Olympics, I think. Any major changes or modifications that you can sort of see moving forward to make this even more powerful?
Well, I think the biggest move for us is we're starting to move into the team sport. So we started with, you know, mostly individual sports like swimming and alpine skiing with one athlete competing at a time. And our team is starting to move into those other sports. Like we started with curling, for example, women's soccer, women's basketball. But there's so many team sports in the Olympics. I think that's the next big step, is to start to take some of the statistics that are already used in the professional version of those sports and apply it to the Olympic level.
Great stuff, Mike. Hey, listen, really appreciate your time today. Very, very interesting stuff, and it's going to be fun to follow all the data and analytics and seeing how, you know, one of the great things that we've seen in Canada is how that unbelievable sport model for our high-performance athletes trickles down into development, and I could see this really being one of those trickle-down effects when it comes to grassroots development.
Yeah, it's another piece of the puzzle to help Canada be more successful. There's a lot that goes into it, but we want to help with that part.
Great stuff, Mike. Hey, the best of luck to you and all your athletes here in the Olympics, and we'll look forward to touching base again in the near future.
All right, thanks for having me.
And there you have it, everybody. A fantastic discussion. The numbers game. There are power in those numbers. There's no doubt about it. I've got to thank Mike Heenan for coming on. Also have to thank Jim Fanna for joining us today. Two fantastic performance discussions. And I'm going to be watching the Olympics now with a slightly different edge. I'm going to be looking at different things. I'm going to be looking how close the finishes are. And I'm also going to be watching the athletes as they get set for competition. What are they thinking? What are they doing? There's a lot to be learned from watching those high performers. So great stuff today. I want to thank you guys for listening. Coming up next week on the show, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to talk baseball. Spring training is underway. 30 teams in action. 32 spring training camps. There is something very strange afoot in the world of baseball. We're going to get to that next week. And we're also going to talk about getting ready for the season. What are the pros doing? What do you need to do if you're a coach, parent, or athlete? Let's avoid injuries this year in baseball. We're going to kick it off next week with a Crush Spring Training Show. I'm really looking forward to this one, and I hope you'll join us. We'll talk to you then.
This is a Leveling the Playing Field Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I'm really excited. I have Shannon Miller. Yeah, the Shannon Miller, former Olympic gymnast and now businesswoman on the pod.
For me, being kind of this far out, I mean, I'm 2 decades out of the 96 game. So for people to still share their stories of where they were and what they were doing and, it, you know, while we won team or the balance beam, that's amazing to me that people smile. They remember that time and they smile. And it's so amazing to have been part of that.
Leveling the Playing Field with Bobby Sue Doyle Hazard can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.